Test.
Check this out.
Ranger.
Autonomous Action Radio, a multimedia radio show, a website, an idea, a suggestion, an action plan. Because it's up to us now.
This communique will most likely be marked and destroyed shortly after it is discovered. Listen on at your own risk.
Hunted large elk, sharp arrows in the quiver, with salmon from the water of the Elwha River. Fish bones make combs, fish oil heal the liver. Elk skin clothing so they didn't have to shiver. Cold winter, campfires in the snow. It all started this way many years ago. Brave weather season, refuse to quit or die. Ancestors all original anti. This is who we are, this is who made us. Recycling paper was not going to save us. Neither was the government or anything in it. Greening industry, just a sales gimmick. Ancestors knew this because they lived through this. They looked at each other and said, yo, let's do this. People shit talked and perceived them as strange, cause they hated the system and gave up on change. Ancestors lived by the plow and the gun, the bow and the arrow, the moon and the sun. They saw it ending before it began, the rise of machines and the fall of your man. We owe them our lives for courage they had. Gone from us now and what happened was sad. Machines came for them like machines come for us. Murdered and most of their village was crushed.
Thoughts, memories, people from before. Life, legacy, cultivate war. Bloodshed, sacrifice, children remember. We don't ever surrender. Thoughts, memories, people from before. Life, legacy, cultivate war. Bloodshed, sacrifice, children remember. We don't ever surrender. Surrender. We don't never surrender. Machines come for us, come for us. We go machines blasting robots for rubble.
Memories. Life, yeah, life. never forget. We live our lives with no fear of regret. The ones who survived started over again. Taught us to live, to attack and defend. Taught us to kill without mercy or pity. And then they made plans to destroy Machine City. Ain't no one here who's afraid to get shot. We fight machines that our grandparents fought. All of our elders have died in the struggle. So we kill machines, blasting robots to rubble. Keep the promise cause we straight hardcore. We burn the city down, cultivate war. Can't live in peace so we break them to pieces. We're sisters and daughters and nephews and nieces. Spartan mentality, we will prevail. We know where we come from and we will not fail. Anti-hero underground, bloodline and bravery. Fuck bourgeois, corporate machine culture, slavery. Tell all of the new recruits to stand tall cause we got good roots. We will not stop until they are all dead. Remember the words that the ancestors said. Earth must survive, machines have to die. Until then do not rest, until then do not cry. I know your roots and you know your soul. Choose your path cause you have control. We have a legacy all to our own. Written in blood and carved into stone. Machines are the enemy, Earth is our home. We try to get lost, they won't leave us alone. Machines have no fear, neither do we. Ancestor legacy rings up the tree. Thoughts, memories, people from before. Life, legacy, cultivate war. Bloodshed, sacrifice, children remember. We don't ever surrender. Thoughts, memories, people from before. Life, legacy, cultivate war. Bloodshed, sacrifice, children remember. We don't ever surrender. Surrender.
My name's Linda. I'm here today with Peter.
Hey, happy April Fool's Day, everyone.
And what you just heard then was Resident Antihero, as has become tradition. And that song was called We Remember.
Yes, well, it's some sort of seasonal event, isn't it, Linda? Like, you know, it's all really quiet out there. Oh, that's right, of course, it's bloody Easter. Oh, yes.
Sorry, that song was actually called Ancestry.
Ancestry. Oh, yeah, yeah.
We remember it goes together. Ancestry.
So not hero something.
It was a Resident Antihero with Ancestry.
Oh, that was the artist, right. Yeah. Well, anyway, I just thought I'd come in today and have a bit of a spruik, if that's all right.
Fantastic.
Because I was going to talk about, once again, about the super rich or the mega wealthy, because we have been known to, you know, bag them a bit, be a bit hard on them. And maybe some people think it's just, you know, tall poppy syndrome, that we're just, you know, some sort of envy or something, and that we're too critical. I mean, after all, as I mentioned in my last rant about them, there are, you know, some possibilities where wealth can be used to advantage, I mean, to you know, to do good. Twiggy Forrest, he's going to employ Aboriginal people in his mines, isn't he? He's going to make a special effort to get them down the mines. And Clive Palmer here in Queensland, he's going to rebuild the Titanic, and that'll be a real boon for the tourism industry, won't it? And what about Gina Rinehart, the wealthiest woman in the world? What's she been up to? Philip Adams did a satirical article in The Australian about how she wants to take over the whole country. You know, scurrilous. She wants to turn it all into Western Australia. It will just be Western Australia, the whole place. But of course, in the real world, she is another one of these people calling us to populate the North. which has been sort of tried before, but populate the north, and she wants special economic zones up there. It's probably like what they got in the third world, you know, with no taxation and lax controls, because so business can boom, so they can get on with the job, and even little things like incentives for second home ownership, so people can have two homes, so we can have lots of little landlords springing up all over the place. So, you know, maybe we do need to, you know, look at our attitudes to the super wealthy. I mean, for some people, obviously, they're heroes, aren't they, because of all the wealth they produce. Well, I'm going to put a few points into consideration here. It's an article from the, I'm getting most of it from the New Internationalist. How can we help? What can you people at home do to help the feral rich? That's what they call them, the feral rich. Once domesticated, now gone wild. Well, there are 10 points that the New Internationalist considers that we should consider. Gang culture. We should break up their criminal gangs and jail the ringleaders, or, you know, send them for re-education or something like that. Some initials that spring to mind are the WTO and the IMF and the Fortune 500, you know, similar to sort of gangs, aren't they? Then there's parenting. We should provide parenting courses to teach social culture and respect for others to their children, so the super rich can pass on positive attitudes. Then there's housing. We should move them out of their overvalued inner city ghettos and turn over the properties to people who really need them. And then there's crime and rehab. We should crack down on repeat offenders and teach them to do stuff like, you know, use public transport. And then there's employment. The work shy people who are living off, you know, investment and trust funds should be, you know, taught the true value of work. There's antisocial behaviour. Should crack down on gambling amongst the super rich. There's a lot of that goes on. It's very sad that they, you know, have to gamble with other people's money.
The stock market, yes.
Yes, of course. I mean, they don't say that here. They just say gambling, but, you know, you can put it together. Profligacy. We should be having a target family planning to those whose carbon footprint and, you know, family lifestyles are, sustainability. Vandalism, they should clean up their own messes. It's quite a lot of that. A social conscience and restorative justice. Well, they should be made to pay back all the money they ripped off. Well, of course, what they're doing there, it's, you know, using those terms which are often directed at the poor, you know, like profligacy and family planning and antisocial behaviour, and they're turning them back on the mega wealthy because, you know, so that's what it's all about. We're all people. We all make mistakes. But when the mega wealthy, when the super rich do bad things, they do it in such a big way that it's hard for some people to comprehend, you know, that their crimes, they're just, oh, it's just like the hand of God or something, isn't it? When some super rich person does something and it's, I don't know, an act of nature or something. So we've got to, you know, keep that perspective that they are people and they should, you know, be accountable for their actions, you know. And I've got a track to play by the British Beat, and it's called, what is it called again? God, I didn't bring my glasses. Oh, Big Shot.
Best. remember, whatever people think is right is right.
Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. Come on up.
The Country Bunny
Teletubbies
Boutique, located in Laurelwood across from Oakwood Mall.
The Teletubbies
Children's Boutique, located in Laurelwood across from
Teletubbies
Mall.
Certain men getting their way.
The Amaki Children's Boutique, located in Bunny Country. Bunny Bunny Country Country 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 Bunny.
We've never promoted some kind of cliched anarchy and rebellion stance, obviously, in our direct, in our music, or whatever.
But just hold on a minute.
But hold on a minute. Wait. Before I can tell you what anarchism is.
Conclusion?
Just never ending, you know. They're just going to continue until they win and beat us down into a pulp.
We won't let that happen.
Well, what a bunch of jerks.
At its best moments, this nation has always found its true source of political energy.
Well,
among those citizens in unexpected places.
Well,
who took it upon themselves to act.
Conclusion?
What a bunch of jerks.
Would they prefer anarchy?
If forced to A, B, or C?
Anarchy is not a form of against law.
Would they prefer anarchy?
If forced to A, B, or C?
Anarchy is not a form of disorder or chaos.
We've been doing, we had a bit of a break, but we've got the Autonomous Action Radio alphabet, and I'm going to continue on with that one today. And F is for feminism, in particular anarcho-feminism or anarcha-feminism, is the joining together of anarchist and feminist principles. Although it could be seen that anarchism and feminism both aim to abolish oppression and are similar. Emma Goldman is considered to be the founder of anarcho-feminism, which challenges patriarchy as a hierarchy to be resisted in conjunction with state power and class divisions. In 1897, she wrote, "I demand the independence of woman, her right to support herself, to live for herself, to love whomever she pleases, and as many as she pleases. I demand freedom for both sexes, freedom of action, freedom in love, and freedom in motherhood." And the next one is file sharing. F is for file sharing and free culture, and I'm going to play a little song from a group called questioncopyright.org.
Copying is not theft. Stealing a thing leaves one less left. Copying, it makes one thing more. That's what copying's for. Copying is not theft. If I copy yours, you have it too. One for me and one for you. That's what copies can do. If I steal your bicycle, you have to take the bus. But if I just copy it, there's one for each of us. Make it more of a thing. That is what we call copying. Sharing ideas with everyone. That's why copying is fun.
And that was a little ditty from a group called QuestionCopyright.org. And the questioning of copyright, as some people suggest, is that it's about ripping artists off or making artists not get the fruits of their production. But I'm going to argue against that. As anarchists believe in the common ownership of the means of production and free sharing of ideas, many anarchists use and produce file sharing networks. File sharing is the practice of distributing or providing access to digitally stored information, such as computer programs, multimedia, documents, or electronic books. Ideas of file sharing and anti-copyright are by no means exclusive to anarchists. Many people partake in file sharing and so-called piracy. And the song you just heard was produced by a US-based non-profit organization called QuestionCopyright.org, which aims to open up debate about copyright and reframe the way we think about copyright. By questioning copyright, it is hoped that artists and content producers realize and embrace the opportunities which abound in collaborative cultural production. Intellectual property and copyright are part of the capitalist system, which is driven by profit and competition. Copyright is a system largely in place to protect the profits of distributors, not artists. There's an organization called Creative Commons, and it's a non-profit organization which originated in California. Creative Commons has developed a system where, instead of copyright meaning all rights reserved, content producers can specify ways in which their work can be reused, remixed, and shared. And one of the founders, or the founder of the Creative Commons system and the organizations, there's many organizations all around the world now who are Creative Commons in different countries. And one of the people who started it is a guy called Lawrence Lessig, who is a professor at Stanford University. And he's a really good public speaker. And we're going to listen to him now talking about free culture.
They've also said, look, the open source movement out there has got to realize that there are a lot of patents at stake. And don't imagine we won't use them when we must. Now, the thing about patents is they're not nuclear weapons, right? It's not physics that makes them powerful, it's lawyers and lawmakers and Congress. And the thing is, you can fight all you want against the physics that makes a nuclear weapon destroy all of mankind, but you can succeed not at all. Yet you could do something about this. You could fuel a revolution that fights these legal threats to you. But what have you done about it? What have you done about it? Second, the copyright wars. Right? There's a certain sense in which these are the Homeric tragedies, right? And I mean this in a very modern sense. Here's a story. So there was a documentary filmmaker who's making a documentary film about education in America. And he's shooting across his classroom with lots of people, kids, completely distracted at television in the back of the classroom. When they get back to the editing room, they realize that on the television, you can barely make out the show for 2 seconds. It's The Simpsons, Homer Simpson, on the screen. So they call up Matt Groening, who was a friend of the documentary filmmaker, and said, is this going to be a problem? It's just a couple seconds. Matt says, no, problem. Call so-and-so. So they called so-and-so. So-and-so said, call so-and-so. Eventually, so-and-sos always end up to be lawyers. So eventually they got to the lawyer, and they said, this is going to be a problem. It's a documentary film. It's about education. It's a couple seconds. The so-and-so said, $25,000. I said, $25,000? It's a couple seconds. What do you mean, $25,000? The so-and-so said, I don't give a goddamn what it is for $25,000 or change your movie. Now, you look at this and you say, this is insane. It's insane. And if it's only Hollywood that has to deal with this, okay, that's fine. Let them be insane. The problem is their insane rules are now being applied to the whole world. This insanity of control is expanding as everything you do touches copyright. So, the broadcast flag, which says, before a technology is allowed to touch DTV, It must be architected to control DTV through watching for the broadcast flag. Rebuild the network to make sure this bit of contact is perfectly protected. Or the mandated Fritalin's chips that will be imposed on machines through the law, which Intel referred to as the police state in every computer quite accurately, and they would build these computers but are opposed to this police state system. And then, most recently, this outrageous proposal that Congress ratify the right of the copyright owners to launch attacks on P2P machines. Malicious code that goes out there and tries to bring down P2P machines. Digital vigilantism. And not only does, you know, you're allowed to sue if they do it and they shouldn't have done it, but you have to go to the Attorney General and get permission from the Attorney General before you're allowed to sue about code that goes out there and destroys your machine when it shouldn't be allowed to have destroyed your machine. This is what they talk about in Washington. This is what they're doing. And you know, the question is, this is their, as Jack Valenti says, terrorist war they're fighting against you and your children, the terrorists, right? Now you step back and you say, for what? Why? What's the problem here? And they say, it's to stop the harm which you are doing. So what is that harm? What is the harm which is being done by these terrible peer-to-peer networks out there? Take their own numbers. They said last year, 5 times the number of CDs sold were traded on the net for free, 5 times. Then take their numbers about the harm caused by 5 times the number sold being traded for free, a drop in sales of 5%. 5%. Now, there was a recession last year, and they raised their prices, and they changed the way they counted. All of those might actually account for the 5%, but even if they didn't, the total harm caused by 5 times being traded for free was 5%. Now, you know, I'm all for war in the right context, but is this the grounds one stands on to call for a, quote, terrorist war against technology? This harm, even at 5%, gives them the right to destroy this industry? I mean, does anybody think about the decline in this industry, which is many times as large as theirs, caused by this terrorist war being launched against anybody who touches new content? Ask a venture capitalist how much money he's willing to invest in new technologies that would touch content in a way that Hillary Rosen or Jack Valenti don't sign off of. The answer is a simple one. Zero. Zero. They've shut down an industry and innovation in the name of this terrorist war, and this is the cause, this is the harm, 5%. And what have you done about it? It's insane, it's extreme, it's controlled by political interests, it has no justification in the traditional values that justify legal regulation, and we've done nothing about it. We're bigger than they are. We've got rights on our side. And we've done nothing about it. We've let them control this debate. Here's the frame that leads to this. They win because we've done nothing to stop it. There's our congressman, J.C. Watts. J.C. Watts is the only black member of the Republican Party in leadership. He's going to resign from Congress. He's been there 7.5 years. He's had enough. Nobody can believe it. Nobody in Washington can believe it. What? Not spend 700 years in Washington? He says, you know, I like you guys, but 7 years is enough. 8 years is too much. I'm out of here. Just about the time J.C. Watts came to Washington, this war on free code and free culture began. Just about that time. In an interview 2 days ago, Watts said, here's the problem with Washington. If you're explaining, you're losing. If you're explaining, you're losing. It's a bumper sticker culture. People have to get it like that, and if they don't, if it takes 3 seconds to make them understand, you're off their radar screen. 3 seconds to understand, you lose. This is our problem. 6 years after this battle began, we're still explaining. We're still explaining, and we are losing. They frame this as a massive battle to stop theft, to protect property. They don't get why re-architecting the network destroys innovation and creativity. They extend copyrights perpetually. They don't get how that itself is a form of theft, a theft of our common culture. We have failed in getting them to see what the issues here are, and that's why we live in this place where a tradition speaks of freedom and their controls take it away. Now, I've spent 2 years talking to you, to us, about this, and we've not done anything yet. A lot of energy building sites and blogs and slash dot stories. Nothing yet to change that vision in Washington. Because we hate Washington, right? Who would waste his time on Washington? But if you don't do something now, this freedom you built, that you spend your life coding, this freedom will be taken away. Either by those who see you as a threat, who then invoke the system of law we call patents, or those who take advantage of the extraordinary expansion of control that the law of copyright now gives them over innovation, either of these two changes through law will produce a world where your freedom has been taken away. And if you can't fight for your freedom, you don't deserve it. But you've done nothing. There's a handful, we can name them, the people you could be supporting, you could be taking. Like, just, you know, here, just take, just put this in perspective. How many people have given to EFF? Okay. How many people have given to EFF more money than they give to their local telecom to give them shitty DSL service? See? Four. How many people have given more money to EFF than they give each year to support, name the monopoly that they're supporting, to support the other side? Right? How many people have given anything to these people? Right? Boucher, Cannon, you know, not, this is not a left and right issue, right? Here's the most important thing to recognize. This is not about conservatives versus liberals. In our case in Eldred, we have this brief filed by 17 economists, including Milton Friedman, James Buchanan, Ronald Coase, Ken Arrow, you know, lunatic. Right, left-wing liberals, right? Friedman said he'd only join it if the word no-brainer existed in the brief somewhere. I think this was a complete no-brainer for him. This is not about left and right. This is about right and wrong. That's what this battle is. These people are from the left and right. Hank Parrott, I think the grandfather of cyberspace, the law of cyberspace, running in Illinois, is struggling to get support to take this message to Washington. These are the sources, the places to go. Then there's this organization. Now, some of you say, I'm on the board of this organization. I fight many battles on that board. Some of you say, we're too extreme. You say that in the wrong way, right? You send emails and say, you're too extreme. You ought to be more mainstream. You know, and I'm with you. I think EFF is great. It's been the symbol. It's fought the battles. But, you know, it's fought the battles in ways that sometimes need to be reformed. Help us. Don't help us by whining. Help us by writing on the check you send in. Please be more mainstream, right? The check, right? This is the mentality you need to begin to adopt to change this battle, because if you don't do something now, then in another 2 years, somebody else will say, okay, 2 years is enough. I got to go back to my life. They'll say again to you, nothing's changed except your freedom, which has increasingly been taken away by those who recognize that the future is against them, and they have the power in D.C. to protect themselves against that future. Free society be damned. Thank you very much.
There, we were listening to Lawrence Lessig, who was the founder of Creative Commons. He's a law professor at Stanford University and has talked and written a lot about copyright laws. And A lot of people are very reactionary when it comes to mentioning copyright and anti-copyright because they go, oh, stealing the artist's money. And Lawrence Lessig argues that it is important as an incentive. And as an anarchist, I don't necessarily agree with this, but as an incentive for people to produce works, is copyright is important because it allows them to get money from it. But then he also talks about, for instance, academic papers where it's actually the company or whoever holds the academic paper that are charging for the academic paper, and it's not the writer of the academic paper that actually is. And this is the same for a lot of other things as well. And as I said earlier, it's the distributor that is taking the money from copyright, not necessarily the creator. I've got some Skidnark Bob Pop Defect Radio and a remix he did when the US, about the US and something called SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act. And in that you'll hear the kind of issues that we're talking about. And after I play Skidnark Bob, we're going to listen to the latest show from The Stimulator, and it's called Colonize, Decolonize This.
There's a war out there, a world war, and it's not about who's got the most bullets. It's about who controls the information, what we see and hear, how we work, what we think. It's all about the information.
The battleground is the internet.
The internet is full of copyrighted material. Every day, users upload words, songs, and images that belong to others and share them with the world online. But proposed legislation in the United States over copyright could soon target websites that contain illegally posted files.
SOPA, the Stop Online Privacy Act.
Driven mostly by Hollywood studios and music companies, they found it almost impossible to stop people stealing their movies and songs on services like YouTube and BitTorrent.
New legislation would block U.S. users from entire websites merely accused of enabling piracy.
But once it's enacted, assuming it's enacted, then it's actually a pretty quick process. First, the copyright holder complains to the Department of Justice. Second, prosecutors go to a judge and say, hey, let's take this website off the internet. Third, judge makes it happen. It could actually happen within a few hours.
Now, the Protect IP Act would allow the Attorney General to create a blacklist of websites that they see as engaging in infringing activities to be blocked by ISP providers, search engines, payment providers, and advertising networks.
They could also block PayPal, which processes the transactions, and Google.
But SOPA goes even further.
A major part of the bill gives the government the power to redirect DNS requests for websites that are deemed dedicated to infringing activities. Now, DNS stands for Domain Name System, and it's the system that translates a website's URL to its numeric IP address. When you type in a URL, your browser sends that URL to a DNS server. Usually, but not always, that's one that's run by your ISP. On that server is a big chart that matches each URL to the correct IP address. That address tells you where the site is, and you're on your way. What the bill does is interrupt this process by telling the DNS server, that lookup directory, to misreport the IP address of the site you're looking for. This causes a number of problems. First of all, making sure that URLs correspond to the correct IP addresses is a big part of the new DNSSEC. That's a security standard that's being rolled out now to prevent cache poisoning and phishing and all sorts of other malicious hacks.
The question is whether or not this is going to do more harm than good. It will, because it can't do any good at all, because DNS blocking doesn't work.
Here's why. Let's find a site whose URL no longer corresponds to the targeted website. Here's one. This site wasn't DNS blocked, its domain name was seized, but for these purposes, the principle and the workaround are the same. As you can see, instead of going to the intended page, I'm redirected to a different IP address, one that hosts this message. But let's just do this. and we can see the actual numeric address listed here. All I have to do is copy this here and paste it here. And there we are. And that's just one of several ways to get around DNS blocking. People have already made browser plugins that do this sort of thing automatically. All it takes is for a user to go download a plugin or an app, and they're good to go. And while all those users are doing that, people are going to be building exploits into those tools, creating more security risks on a much larger scale.
So, DNS blocking, it creates security problems, global political problems, and it doesn't even work. So why do it?
Critics call SOPA internet censorship. It's been dubbed the Great American Firewall. Internet companies such as Google, eBay, Yahoo, and Twitter have written open letters to the public and Washington denouncing the bill. They say it will stifle online innovation. Civil liberties and human rights groups are also worried.
63% of Americans, according to some recent surveys I've seen, admit willingly to downloading music illegally. Now, the music industry, the movie industry, calls that theft. Ask yourself if you really believe that 63% of Americans would willingly walk into a bookstore and pilfer a DVD.
No, but when you can do it with anonymity.
Of course they wouldn't. Now hold on. But the reason that they wouldn't is not, the reason that they behave a different way online than they would in the store is not necessarily because the internet offers anonymity. It's because the music company and the movie company simply don't offer them a better way to go out and purchase this music in a way that fits whatever the consumer needs are. Here's what this is like. This is like the telegraph industry trying to sue the telephone to shut it down because it will destroy their antiquated business model that hasn't kept up with the technology.
It's a pattern we've seen again and again. In the early 80s, when the first video cassette recorders came out, the movie industry tried to kill the technology because they saw it as a tool for piracy. When the first MP3 players came out in the 1990s, the music industry tried to kill the technology as a tool for piracy. YouTube is still embroiled in lawsuits with companies that see it as too much of a tool for piracy. The instinct of the industry is always to kill innovation that disrupts their business models or threatens the way they're used to doing things.
Right now, there's two paths a country can take when it comes to the internet. They can follow the US model, where openness is prized and people can access whatever they want, wherever they want. Or they could follow a model much more like the Chinese, where access is restricted, where the government gets to determine which sites their citizens can and can't visit. If this bill passes, then there's only one example for all of these countries to follow. It's just a matter of them choosing what reasons they want to block access to the internet.
There's a war out there, a world war, and it's not about who's got the most bullets. It's about who controls the information, what we see and hear, how we work, what we think. It's all about the information.
This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Spanky very much.
It was a bloody day at the Mohawk Indian community in Oka, Quebec, near Montreal. Provincial police in riot gear stormed the barricades the Mohawks had set up. There were clouds of tear gas, a hail of bullets, and in the midst of the battle, a policeman was killed. All this because of a dispute over a piece of forest the Indians claim is theirs. A forest town council wants to bulldoze to expand the local golf course.
The police retreated as abruptly as they'd attacked, leaving behind their cruisers. They also left a heavy front-end loader, which the Mohawks immediately put to their own use. The police cruisers, crushed and useless, became barricades themselves.
We treat these trees and the land like our mother. These people are raping our mother. What would you do if they raped your mother?
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, the show where we say it's fucking Dead Jesus Friday, so sharpen your weapons, because it's decolonized time. I am your host, Stimulator, and if you find yourself in a jam and Superman is not coming to the rescue, you should start looking for superheroes south of the border, in the land of the most delicious, scrumptious, mouth-watering food treat ever created in the history of the universe. Don't fucking say it.
Y ahora, ¿quién
para defenderme.
¡Yo!
El super...
The masked Avenger has been rolling up on rallies on a Harley to pump up Mexico's Electrical Workers Union, or SME, whose membership of over 40 fucking thousand got fired after the colonic-drinking limp chorizo and former press Felipe Shit Taco Calderon privatized the country's power company.
I've heard whispers about the financial support your government receives from the drug industry.
Well, the irony of this, of course, is that this money, which is in the billions, is coming from your country.
But if luchadores in capes don't do the job at getting rid of the criminally nauseating nacho snacks, you might want to consider creating your own people's army. In Guerrero, Mexico, indigenous peeps got fed up with the abuse of crooks who sling dope and rape and kidnap their comrades. So they set up their own auto defense forces to safeguard themselves and deliver their own brand of justice.
Like any other citizen, we want peace. There was no way to live peacefully here until we organized. That is why I support this crew.
This idea resonated with many indigenous communities in the land of tacos, who, after seeing the government's inability and lack of desire to protect their crews, started picking up guns and setting up their own protection squads. So far, native security posses have popped up in Chiapas, Michoacán, Oaxaca, and Jalisco. In Minnesota, land defenders from the Red Lake Anishinaabe Nation occupied land illegally conquered by Canadian tar sands pipeline cartel Enbridge.
This is land that has never had an easement on it. So the pipeline company has no legal jurisdiction to this land. And that's why we're able to stay here, and they're not able to come here and tell us that we're trespassing.
The native crew fenced up the area to prevent further oil infrastructure from being built out and have set up a protection camp to chill motherfuckers out. If you have any doubts that more decolonizing forces of self-defense are needed, just check out the fucked up shit that went down in Brazil. Indigenous peeps who have been occupying a building next to a soccer stadium were brutally evicted by Rio Pigs, who, under orders from their barbaric bosses, shot our peeps with rubber bullets and attacked them with tear gas, all in the name of cleaning up the area for the World Cup. But even in the most militarized places, the uncompromising fearlessness of the indigenous resistance has proven that hearts are stronger than bullets. This is exemplified by the Nasa people of the Cauca region of so-called Colombia, who have been cut up in the middle of a fight between the outdated commie brigades of the FARC and the coke-snorting drug-trafficking U.S. lackeys of the Colombian government.
Aren't you ashamed? You are invading a territory that doesn't belong to you. You should be ashamed to call yourself a soldier.
But before I play you this footage from last year, I want you to consider how good you fucking have it before you make any motherfucking excuse about not joining the motherfucking resistance. You see, the NASA confronted the heavily armed Colombian army with nothing but sticks and their relentless desire to control their fucking destinies. Check this shit out.
Until the crimes are paid in full, I promise that I'm conscious of their dirty fucking lives. I know too many of my natives who just couldn't wait to die. Do you feel that? And would you hate me if I killed them? Same crooked pigs who couldn't wait to rape our children. Fuck that for every empty grave that they drop and give the city cities burn. Without concern for the consequence, I stand with savages who walk the same path. Native but not the rain dance. Cock back and knock your brains out. Back to basics, they've had these places in this land of all the longer holding back. Low straps and let this battle start all or nothing. Call your bluff, you ain't about the realness. I'm out to kill them, firebombing, and knocking down their buildings. We in the shadows where resistance breaks, gripping heat to victory. And it's war I swore never to submit beneath them.
This week, a crew of indigenous folks arrived in Ottawa after a 1,600-kilometer trek by foot. The youngins did this arduous winter walk in solidarity with Idle No More. Unless you have been totally fucking distracted by zombie TV shows, Idle No More is an indigenous-led movement started in reaction to some fucked-up Canadian laws that threatened to undermine native sovereignty. The movement spread like wildfire, and while its founders are pretty moderate, radical elements within Idle No More have disrupted critical infrastructure of the Canadian death machine with border, highway, and train blockades. Others feel that the discourse of Idle No More has to go beyond dialoguing and petitioning the colonial government of occupation and pushing for full fucking decolonization. But what the fuck is decolonization? Well, I'm gonna fucking tell you. For this, I spoke with Amanda Lickers, an indigenous organizer from Negoshawanong. Hey Amanda, how the fuck are you?
Not too fucking bad.
So what the fuck is colonialism?
Colonialism is some fucked up shit. It is the ongoing occupation of indigenous territories, to put it very shortly. It is a process of land theft. It is a process of disenfranchisement, of exploitation, of assimilation, of genocide. It is the imposition of one culture's life ways and traditions and laws upon another, totally undermining the sovereignty and autonomy of that other nation.
So what the fuck is a settler?
A fucking settler is someone who is not indigenous to Turtle Island, meaning that their ancestors came here either by choice or coerced. And so there's different types of settlers. Like, people often assume that all settlers are like white people, but that's not necessarily true. There are stories, you know, of settlers of like who are non-white, you know, settlers of color who were coerced onto coming here and came here with their own autonomy violated, and they were indigenous folks from their communities who were stolen, you know, and brought to be exploited in order to build the so-called fucking new world. So settler privilege is something that can vary also depending on sort of like skin privilege as well. And there's different narratives around diaspora, diaspora is like a community where you are reviving your cultural traditions despite being physically or geographically displaced from those areas. And so that's just a distinction I think is necessary to see.
What do you mean when you say Turtle Island?
Turtle Island is the true name for North America, to give it really brief. There's a lot of stories like the Haudenosaunee. It's part of our creation story. And I understand that the Anishinaabe also use that term. I feel like a lot of nations, I don't want to speak for other nations. But that's how a lot of indigenous folks refer to North America.
And what is an ally, and how does one become one?
Okay, well, first of all, allyship is something that's determined by the community that is affected. So I wouldn't necessarily be able to say what allyship looks like for another indigenous community, but largely from my experiences, things that would move towards allyship as an action and a practice, it's not an identity, you just aren't like an ally and you can never be a self-appointed ally. So things like, first of all, understanding the histories of the territories that you're occupying, finding out who is there before you, who's been displaced, whose blood has been spilled, and if you are a settler, finding out the ways in which your family, you know, your histories, or even, you know, your municipality and the government have been complicit and actively played a part in that process, and also examining your own understandings and what informs those understandings in order to identify how you're contemporarily complicit in the ongoing assimilation, erasure, and genocide of indigenous peoples and their stories and their struggle for autonomy. Another thing to do is not to fucking co-opt struggles and think that you are automatically entitled to space in an indigenous community or in the context of an indigenous struggle. And I think one of the best things that cannot possibly be done is to begin to understand the narrative of colonization and then be able to understand what decolonization looks like as a process of undoing colonization. And then once you start to build that understanding and that knowledge base and that education, then you can begin to engage in meaningful dialogues with indigenous nations around how to be of aid to them and creating space for them and helping them to move towards self-determination and resurgence.
And that about does it for this edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine. This carnival of shit-talking was made possible by these fine fuckers.
Audrey, Paul, Aaron, Media Pile, Ismael, Atrocity Arts, Craig, Joel, Amit, Patrick, Albatross, Gumby, Francis, and Simo, Gaspacho. To comment on this show or for links to the colonizing infos, just visit my fucking website, stimulator.tv. See you next time, suckers. We got a spirit that surrounds and won't allow surrender. So we'll fight with every ounce and we'll be down whenever. Remember what the fuck them devils did, this rebel shit. And ever since we've been told, we know this war will never end. We got a spirit that surrounds and won't allow surrender. So we'll fight with every ounce and we'll be down whenever. Remember what the fuck them devils did, this rebel shit. And ever since we've been told, we know this war.
You've been listening to Autonomous Action Radio on Zed Digital. For more information about the show, you can go to autonomousactionradio.com or 4ZZZFM.org.au.
Smash it up.